This is the October 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Logan Kimmel at Broach Ag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois. Jim McCormick joins us from agmarket.net in Barrington, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. And Arlen Suderman of StoneX joins us from Kansas City, Missouri. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. And in part, we are sponsoring, along with the Farm Doc Daily team, the University of Illinois Agricultural Economist, the Farm Assets Conference. You can get your tickets today if you'd like at farmassetsconference.com or on our website at willag.org. This is at the iHotel in person this year on the 21st day of November. That's the Monday, the week of Thanksgiving. Details again and registration are online right now at farmassetsconference.com. Let's get a list of items that we ought to take up for the day. We'll go in order, starting with Logan Kimmel from Roach Ag Marketing. What's on your list today, Logan?
Thanks for having me. I think today in the grain markets shows kind of what we've seen this whole week. Fairly quiet by the settle, and I think we're passing through harvest, which is taking a little pressure off the top end on the hedge side of the market. But we've seen this corn market really like to just hover around this 680 level, and soybeans similar, getting just right at to their 20-day moving averages. So awfully quiet as we're passing through harvest here this week. This market looks like it's coiling up despite a big day in the outside markets with livestock and the financials today.
Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, your discussion points for the day?
Oh, I think, Todd, we ought to look a bit about the demand aspect, especially on the beans. I'm concerned about China's repercussion of what they may do now that we're really ratcheting up the trade war from just tariffs like we've been battling since the Trump administration to Joe Biden, President Biden, really ratcheting up on those chip wars, essentially blocked them from buying chips. I think you've got to be very cognizant. If you're holding beans right now, you could get a very expensive lesson if the Chinese try to punish us for blocking their purchases of computer chips, and as well as you need to kind of keep an eye on the corn market sales simply because they're so far behind last year's pace.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I think a couple things that are front and center here. The outside markets have finally stabilized, seeing a little correction lower here recently off the highs in the dollar. Crude oil trying to kind of push up towards $90. So I think outside markets really still affecting us. I think logistics are going to be an issue too, to kind of add on to what Jim said about China. You add on to that the Mississippi River problems, and this last part of fall and into winter are going to be really challenging from a logistics and basis standpoint.
And finally, Arlen Suderman of StoneX.
Oh, a couple of things I think that we need to be keeping our eyes on is going back to China again, and that's the outcome and some of the specific things that came out of the 20th meeting of Congress of the Chinese Communist Party that I think could be a real turning point, some of the statements and actions taken. And the other would be the tremendous shortage of feed into major feedlot states that's impacting our national basis. Basis was mentioned, but more detailed specifics about what's happening in the West and how that big sucking sound we hear is trying to pull corn from the East to the West.
Let's begin with the Communist Party annual convention. It wrapped up on Sunday. This is the third time that President Xi will be signed on as president for a five-year term, although it looks possibly as it did last time, as it would be for life. What were the outcomes that you found of most interest?
Well, I think there are several keys here. One, he totally purged the leadership of anybody who's not a total loyalist. And it seems if you look at who he kicked off, loyalty was really above necessarily good policy. Loyalty to the Communist Party and to him specifically. Some of those who had come through the China Communist Youth League, who were maybe some of the brightest academic minds that we see in China, were removed. And so we're not necessarily looking at what's the best policies coming out of China, but what's going to be the best from an ideal log standpoint. And that gets a little bit scary. So where do we apply that? First of all, it means we maintain the zero dynamic or the dynamic zero COVID policy. And with COVID numbers going up again this week after the Congress is over, that means we've seen more lockdowns and more restrictions and more problems for the economy that ultimately could negatively impact demand for commodities. And frankly, we don't know when that'll be lifted. Looks like the economy of the world's largest commodity importer is going to be struggling for a while. The second most significant thing is the emphasis on Taiwan and looking at the makeup of the inner circle of seven that has been created. One of the people who is on that inner group now was in charge of the East Theater military of China that was responsible for the blockade of Taiwan that took place in August. And the statements made on two different days during the Congress indicate that a takeover of Taiwan is now more likely and probably sooner rather than later, which could have significant implications for U.S. exports of commodities to China. So I think those are the two primary concerns. There was a lot of other things that came out of there as well, but I think we saw some dynamic pivots in the leadership of China, which means it's going to be one voice, probably not much dialogue coming out of China. It's one voice, and whatever Xi Jinping wants is what Xi Jinping will get.
Jim McCormick, this part of the world is on your radar at agmarket.net. We're talking about trade war, chips, and some bans the United States has put in place. Can you explain further?
Well, it's kind of building on what Arlen said. It said it best. China really seems to start taking more of a militaristic viewpoint of the world at this point in time. If you look at our carryout right now, it's around 200 million bushels. But, you know, there's an argument that could be said. If China really starts to make a pivot away from us, that carryout could go to 300, 350 million. We saw what happened at the very beginning of the trade war when China made a really hard pivot away from U.S. beans and the bean market really broke hard. I think weather's going to have a huge impact on it, Todd. If South America does have a dryness issues, it's going to make China a little bit harder for them to pivot away from the U.S. products. But if South America's weather ends up being normal and they actually have the trend yield that they're projecting and pushing that crop over 150 million metric tons, plus like a lot of people think they could with good weather, why would China keep buying our beans, unfortunately? As they essentially try to retaliate against us, because the fact of the matter is what we've done by blocking chip sales and technology to China, we are slowing down their economic growth. And I think they'll push back. And I'm very fearful what the price of beans could be then in the springtime if you combine a record crop out of South America combined with the world's biggest bean buyer saying, we don't want to buy your products.
Chip Nellinger, following up on this, are you concerned about China becoming more nationalistic, closing down their economy, the COVID shutdowns that continue, and for whatever reason that might be, as well as the statistics that have simply disappeared and are no longer available, even if some of those were doubted?
Yeah, very concerned. To put it in perspective, not to be too blunt, they don't like us. They don't, I believe, at the heart of it, think that we are their friends. And so now with the not only going back to the Trump administration with the tariffs, but now this chip issue, I don't think they're liking us very much. And to put what Jim said in perspective, you know, there's some statistics out there, some estimates, privately out of Brazil, that their crop size could be up towards 153 million metric tons. And to put that in perspective, how big that is, that's upwards of 5.6 billion bushels, where we're, somewhere around 4.3-ish? So that's a lot of extra beans. I think to Jim's point, they're just waiting to see if they have a big crop in Brazil. And not only are they just licking their chops about buying all that they can from Brazil and none from us, you probably are going to play the game of the cancellation game sometime down the road if you have a big crop out of Brazil. So now, all that being said, I don't think it's tomorrow or next week. We've got a window here where we're the only game in town still. And so I think we have to keep that in the back of our minds. I don't think this is something that we wake up tomorrow and beans drop a dollar and never come back. But I think it's on the horizon, especially if continued good weather in Brazil.
Okay, so Logan Kimmel, you mentioned soybeans quiet by the settle, actually corn as well. Both taking a look at those 20-day moving averages, but coiling up. Are you feeling friendly or not so friendly to the marketplace?
Well, I think there's a lot of uncertainty right now. But to Chip's point, I think it's a window on the soybeans. And I think the market and the funds and the traders are waiting to see how this weather progresses in Brazil, which so far has not had an issue. Now, will there be marketing opportunities going forward if there are weather problems and production issues? I think so. And you could maybe see a push and an opportunity by year's end, to have a better price on the soybeans. But just going back to another thing, I think on the export side that we have to remember, too, is what does the dollar do? We've seen a break in the U.S. dollar, but if that continues to trend higher, that in theory would make our exports even less attractive than South America's crop, too.
So, Arlen Suderman, if we go back to the Trump administration when the trade war first really began with China, and we're thinking about what that nation did. They shut down, of course, the import of U.S. soybeans into their nation. There were some extenuating circumstances at that point as it's related to African swine fever and their real need for soybeans. Is the extenuating circumstance this time the economy and COVID? And are you concerned in the same way?
Well, the extenuating circumstance this time is they don't want to pay what they have to pay, and they certainly don't want to pay it to the United States if they can avoid it. And our estimate coming out of Brazil or from our latest customer survey, which will be updated next week, is over 153 million metric tons. And so if you look at that from a production standpoint, what that is over the previous year, you're looking at, what, about a 26 million metric ton plus increase. And we just exported a little over 30 million metric tons to them this year. So Brazil's increase in production could be almost as big as in the entirety of what we exported in the past year. And China's watching that. As we talk to our cash sources on the ground in China, they definitely see that, and they're holding off on their coverage for around the change of the calendar year to wait and see what's happening. Now, Brazil's been pretty good weather to this point, but the extended outlook has been turning really dry for at least half of the belt for November, and that keeps moving forward in the forecast and seems to be consistently there in the forecast, so that could raise some real concerns if it happens.
And then turn your attention to the corn market. I think this is where you're headed with that large sucking sound as it's related to bases in the eastern part of the belt, because there are so few bushels that are, the further west you go, the fewer bushels there really are. What does that mean?
Yeah, the major feedlot states, if corn's too high priced or in tight supply, then the alternative is milo or grain sorghum or wheat. And we've had a very short grain sorghum crop this year, nearly roughly half of what we would normally grow. The wheat crop was short because of the drought. And so if you add them all together, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, we had ground piles everywhere of grain in the plains in the feedlot states. Those disappeared over the past year because demand for feeding cattle exceeded the production of available grain. And so those disappeared. And now we're looking at nearly a billion bushel reduction in production for corn, grain sorghum, and wheat this year in those feedlot states. And so there's right now over 200 trains that have been scheduled to haul corn into the western feedlot belt coming from the north, northeast, and the east, anywhere they can find them. And that's still far short. That's just a fraction of what's going to be needed.
Jim McCormick, what do the basis traders at JSA tell you about this?
Well, what we're seeing is it's an interesting dynamic. You know, we're seeing some weakness in the basis along the river market because of the low river levels. But the basis, I've seen customers here in Illinois really getting a really good bush on the basis all the way in the springtime as they're trying to feed that market Arlen was talking about. Now, one thing that's going to be a little bit interesting, I think, on the basis here in the eastern part of the Midwest, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about it, but we're finding we've got a problem with vomitoxin in parts of Indiana, all the way across the northern parts of Indiana that's bleeding all the way over toward Lima, Ohio, where five or six of the ethanol plants that we know of are dealing with too high of the vomitoxin showing up in the DDGs, and it's just throwing that DDG market into chaos over there, which it's just going to add to a lot of the weirdness of the basis, because a lot of that corn tends to go southeast to the poultry markets and into the hog markets down in the Carolinas. So I think if you're in an eastern part of the Midwest, you're going to see some just very strange and positive, probably potentially more than likely positive basis improvement as the market tries to figure out how to feed this livestock this year.
And then Chip Nellinger, because you're there in Morton, Illinois, right on the Illinois River or very close, what do the numbers look like from that part of the world?
Well, it's strange. I think in the very short run here, it's horrible. It's basis you would normally expect in the gut of harvest. And, you know, to a certain extent, Northern Illinois is in the gut of harvest, 50 to 70 under on the Northern Illinois River. But then you get out into a winter time frame, and it's historically very good. You've got, evens to slightly overs. At the river, the processor market is holding on. It, as Jim mentioned, it is just a really strange thing. You'd think with the basis weakness caused by the Mississippi River that the ethanol market would fall back, but it really hasn't. And I think, to Arlen and Jim's point, that's because you've got a lot of train corn moving back west that normally would be feeding into these Eastern Corn Belt processing market. So it's a very strange situation out there right now, and it's not easy. It just adds more complexity to what probably is one of the toughest markets I can remember in many, many years, if not ever. I don't know. I don't have a good rational guess on what's going to happen. I'm a little bit scared as I look out of this and I ask myself, what's going to fix the Mississippi River? It's probably not going to be a 2-week or 2-month deal. It's probably not till next spring at the earliest that you really fix the Mississippi River situation. I'm a little bit fearful that eventually once corn harvest gets finished up, that the processors will end up getting a little better flow of corn and that this basis around here falls apart. But, you know, I can see the other side of that too with the disruption that we have in the Western Corn Belt. One thing that I think you're going to see before it's said and done is some imports of Brazil corn into that Eastern Corn Belt for those poultry and hog feeders there on the Eastern Seaboard.
Logan Kimmel, the USDA in its WASD for October put ending stocks for this year, this marketing year that is, at 1.172 billion bushels. That's very tight. However, with the Mississippi River at the lowest levels they have been for quite some time, the ability to move corn, which doesn't always happen until after January, because usually we're taking care of soybeans at this time of year. Does the domestic situation, the short crop, offset all of that? And does it still look and act like a 1.17 billion bushel carryout? Or does it feel bigger than that?
Well, that's a good question. And what do they do with the numbers on the next report in regards to feed demand versus the slower exports? And we saw that today on the corn being below pace and partly due to the river levels, but also the high dollar. But going back to the points said earlier on the Western belt, with the dryness this year in Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, the pastures being all burnt up, animals coming in lighter and needing to be fed corn, I think that could keep our domestic usage higher, on the feed side, but also maybe the ethanol side too. So I don't think I would see that slowing down here on the domestic usage due to the dryness and the livestock sector needing the feed side here.
Yeah, I was just going to add that right now basis in the Western High Plains feedlot belt is around 215 over December corn. So that gives you a little bit of idea of the extremes. We need to ration it, and the cash market is kind of acting like this is a sub billion bushel carryout right now, even though USDA is just below 1.2 billion. So the cash market's acting, when you look at the national picture, like it's sub a billion. We need to ration demand, and the low Mississippi River is kind of making sure that rationing takes place on the export market, which allows the domestic market to thrive a little bit better, if you will, in this situation, if you call it thriving, and be able to sustain demand. So hopefully that'll keep our livestock fed and our ethanol plants going. What we're doing to ration demand on the export side. Now, it's a little bit more difficult to read on the corn side because we're putting a focus on soybeans. If we can move anything down the river, it's going to be soybeans. China's rolled several million metric tons of soybeans that they just don't have the confidence at any price that they would get delivered onto Mississippi. So the focus is on whatever beans can be delivered, and then maybe we'll do better in corn down the road, but it's still going to depend on how much supplies are coming from South America. And I agree with the comment that we'll probably be importing corn and later in the year, probably soybeans as well into the Southeast.
Will the PNW be really active?
Yeah, it is, definitely. We're moving a tremendous amount of soybeans through the PNW along with some corn, but more wheat, primarily soybeans and wheat.
How should farmers east of the Mississippi River think about this, or those who normally would use the Mississippi River as an export market, because clearly they're going to have decisions to make. And I think it's pretty difficult when your export market, which for soybeans, I thought was like 60% or something like that, out of, well, of all soybeans, but 75%, I think, of Illinois soybeans go down the river. This is just an interesting and conundrum that they'll have to face. How should they consider both corn and soybeans? And I'll go around the horn, but Arlen, I'll let you start.
Well, first of all, soybeans, it's not just the river the problem, but going back to what we're talking about with the possibility of losing China, as a buyer, I think you have to look at the basis that's being offered now and the flat price that's being offered now and not get too greedy. Look at what will maintain the equity in your farm. And if that can happen, just don't get too greedy, especially with the soybeans. I think that should be the concern going forward. On the corn side, I think there will be opportunities that may be different than what you normally have.
I think you keep it simple. I think if you're in most places in the Eastern Corn Belt, particularly here in Illinois, I know there were some dry pockets where this isn't the rule, but many, many producers I talk to are having massive corn yields. I look at, I think they're about a 20 over indicator. I think the processor is a 5 to 7 over for winter in Hennepin. Look at your gross dollars per acre. I'm not even probably going to gamble on basis out there. It's massive gross dollars, massive net revenue. I think you take it and lock it in while you have it. Bird in hand type situation.
Chip said it best. I agree. I mean, it's a little bit easier if you're in the east compared to the west, but you're looking at historically high prices, Todd. The last time we had prices anywhere close to this at this time of year was the drought year of 2012. The dollars that you can lock in, I think you grab that bird in the hand and you leave the bush for the options. You know, if you want to play the game in beans specifically, and I've got a few customers, they're bullish basis for different reasons. I mean, I'm just imploring them, and I implore any producer, if you've got beans unpriced in that bin, you need to put up some kind of a put strategy under this market, because I truly do believe that if the Brazilian crop is there, the Chinese are going to stiff us, and they're going to stiff us hard. And that's going to be negative, you know. So I think it's there. On the corn, it's still the same thing. The dollars are there. I think you look at the gross dollars and move on. And if you're bullish, do a vertical call spread out in July. I mean, you're in an interesting situation. East corn's trading at 682. July corn's trading at 681. You're not having to pay for a carry to buy a July options. So just lock in the profits, and if you want to play the what if we stay dry, what if Brazil stays dry, so what are the options strategy?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Zooming out, historically good prices, and if it does make sense on your farm to lock it in, I think you should. And it, you can always come in with a re-ownership call strategy if you want to in the market for higher prices. But at this point, it just feels like, not just in the grains, but overall markets, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of risk. And I think for commodities, if things turn south, that could lead to lower prices with the uncertainty and a lot of moving parts in the markets overall.
I'd like to take up one other topic, and I'm not sure who will want to tackle this to begin with, renewable diesel. And I'm wondering about the development of renewable diesel plants. There are several of them already in the works, that is. Whether that will, those will simply offset in part biodiesel or soy diesel production, or whether it feels more like a 2005-2006 didn't quite catch it, that the ethanol build-out was coming and the market will continue to rise. Anybody have thoughts?
I can take a stab at that. What we're seeing in the renewable diesel is very much like what we saw with the ethanol generation that we saw 15 years ago. It is a dynamic that is very similar, probably what's holding it back or slowing it, so it'll be, won't be as fast as what we saw with ethanol, is just building the infrastructure. Takes time to build new crushing facilities in order to crush for the oil to produce these. But from what we are seeing is these new plants are coming on, and because of the big subsidies, not just federal subsidies, but state subsidies that states are offering, is they are seeing some very good returns, and they are expanding rapidly. We increased crush about 100 million bushels last year, another 100 million bushels this year. Next year, we probably should add another 250 million bushels or so, and it just keeps accelerating. And so we're basically looking at a deficit of soy oil from 2000, developing sometime next year, continuing to 2027 before we start to catch up with enough crush capacity to meet the oil needs of these plants coming online. So it is a friendly story. The question that you say, okay, that sounds pretty friendly, then why are you so bearish soybeans? Is because all the reasons we said, we could lose the export business much faster than what we bring on the new renewable diesel business. So that's a timing issue.
Is there also an issue with the meal that's left over, Arland, or anybody else?
Definitely an issue with the meal. It should be good for livestock producers. I mean, that's a plus. I was on a strategic planning committee for U.S. Soybean Export Council about 18 months ago. I can't remember now the timing. And I said one of the things we need to be doing is be looking overseas for more markets for the meal. And that's one of the things I know they're working on, to expand markets overseas for meal. And we've had a couple weeks of some strong meal exports this fall as well. So I think that does bode well for the supply of meal and helping out the livestock industry that'll be competing with DDGs as well.
I would say, adding on what Arlen said, I think the one thing that's really exciting about this renewable and all that is who's actually putting the investment in. If you look at the reality is in the ethanol industry, the ag industry was always fighting big oil. They didn't want to put the ethanol in a product. The reality is, I mean, they viewed it for every gallon of ethanol went into that gas tank was a gallon of gas they couldn't sell you. Well, they are the big backers behind all these renewables. They're the big money behind it. So I think that is where you got to be really, really excited about it, and that they're not fighting the ag industry. They're drawing the ag industry for it. But I think your biggest problem in the long run, Todd, is in the really big picture. We're just going to, as Brazil continues to expand its acreage, they're going to feed more and more of the world export market. We're just going to be a little bit more and more driven where we're just going to use it domestically, I think, and just kind of keep the balance. So I think it's friendly long term. Like Arlen said, it's a timing issue. But in the long run, I think we're actually going to lose export market share that'll offset our domestic demand.
And I think I'd rather depend on domestic than export. I think that's a good move.
I 100% agree. It'll smooth out some of the uncertainty like we're facing right now. Like, what do you do with the beans today? How much do you rely on China to actually buy the beans we think they're going to buy?
Chip Nellinger, a couple of things that were on your list we have not taken up yet. Outside markets, dollar and crude oil at $90 a barrel.
Yeah, again, I think it goes into a couple things there. A, we saw some just absolute direct correlation this week so far with grain price action to that dollar. We've kind of rolled over from the highs. We broke some support. Now we rallied back today and it pressured the grain markets. But, you know, one day doesn't make a trend here. So if we have topped the dollar and it continues to break, that could give us a little bit of a tailwind for our normal seasonal post-harvest rally into winter. The other thing about that is crude oil kind of just shy of 90 bucks today. You know, we've done all we could to talk gas prices down with strategic petroleum reserve releases ahead of these elections. OPEC, you know, cutting production. I just get a sense that after the elections into the end of the year, first part of the new year, it would be very easy to see crude oil and energy prices rally again. That, while not good for the consumer pocketbook, is probably pretty good news for ethanol margins if that were to happen. So, you know, I think the makings there, again, we saw the Canadian Central Bank kind of slow their roll a little bit on interest rate increases. The market thought they were going to have 75 basis point increase. I only went 50. Next week, our Federal Reserve is going to see, you know, a similar action there. We'll see what they do. But if the market gets a sense that we're coming to maybe not necessarily a pivot, but a slowdown of these interest rate increases, you could see a better reaction to the upside in the outside markets, meaning lower dollar, higher interest rate, I should say lower interest rates, and increasing S&P and stock market. And that could be a little bit beneficial going into the end of the year for the grain markets, especially if crude oil would rally as well.
Let's wrap it up now. We'll begin with Logan Kimmel at Roach Ag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois. Your final word for the day, please.
Well, as we're chewing through harvest here, I think a lot of outside markets are moving as well. And into the end of the year, when seasonally we get a post-harvest rally, I think producers need to look at the revenue side and what makes sense for their operation and lock in prices going into the end of the year with all the outside factors that could be in effect. There's ways to still maintain upside with call options, but if it makes sense on your farm for corn and bean sales on a rally, I think that's a wise move to lock in those levels going forward.
Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net out of Barrington, Illinois. Your final word?
As producers wrap up the season, take a really good hard look at where your break-evens are and your profitability. There's a lot of black swans swimming, you know, flying over our head. We've got the economy. You've got the Ukraine situation. We're telling people, lock it in, book the profits. But don't just think about this crop. Also, get a little bit more aggressive potentially into the 2023 crop year. Don't be afraid to start laying off some of that risk, because if the economy would really turn over, it will probably go down a lot harder than people think. One quick chart people might want to look at that might spook them a little bit: look at the cotton chart. It's amazing how quick the cotton market went from a very bullish situation to a very bearish situation. A lot of that was just the perception of demand. The supply didn't change, the perception of demand changed, and the market collapsed. If the perception of the demand drops for whatever reason, our markets could do the same thing in the corn and beans. So don't be afraid to book those profits.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I just, you know, second what I said earlier, and to Jim's point that he just made, focus on the bottom line. There's massive uncertainty there, outside markets, China, Ukraine, South America. If you're blessed with great yields here in the Eastern Corn Belt, particularly in Illinois, look at your gross revenue and lock some of that in. If you want to play the upside, get some calls out there. But focus on revenue. And I think the other thing that's very important, we have been really blessed with massive net profits the last couple of years. I think we got to readjust our brains a little bit and kind of get back to what's quote unquote normal, you know, not $200-$400 an acre, but $75 to $100 an acre for the 23 and 24, and kind of get back to what's quote unquote normal.
Glad you could scare everybody. Arlen Suderman of StoneX out of Kansas City, Missouri.
I don't disagree. In fact, I agree with most everything we've heard today. But we know of farmers in the eastern Midwest getting called by processors, offering them strong basis offers for June and July delivery. And they're saying, we're in the middle of harvest. Why are you calling me for June and July? And they say, because we're worried that the West is going to suck all the corn out of here before we get to June and July. So next summer is going to be a real challenge for the market. And end users know it, and they're starting to respond now and present some of those opportunities now.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole program anytime you'd like at willag.org. You'll also find a way there to register for the Farm Assets Conference, or you can go to farmassetsconference.com. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Arlen Suderman of StoneX, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, and Logan Kimmel at Roach Ag Marketing. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.